I'm Danica Juarez.
And I'm Jan James.
And this is
How's It Hold Up?
Hi, I'm Danica.
And I'm Jan.
And I'm Valerie.
And today we watch the 1985 movie, The Care Bears Movie.
Woo!
Who would like to give a brief spoiler-free plot synopsis of the Care Bears movie? I'll do it. There's a guy and he's telling a bedtime story to a bunch of kids. And the story is about Kim and Jason, two kids whose parents died. They're orphans. Their parents went away. So they have no parents. And so they're really jaded about the world. And the Care Bears want to help them out. And also there's a kid called Nicholas who is an assistant to a carnival magician and isn't treated real well and doesn't seem to be loved by anybody. So he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder and he discovers a magic book with a evil bald lady inside who tells him that she can help him get revenge on the world for not loving him. And the Care Bears basically want to fix both of these things. And they go on an adventure to do so. They fix the two kids being sad without their parents pretty easily. They just have a song and play up in Carolot in the clouds for a bit. And then they have to go on a lot more of an adventure to stop the evil book lady and Nicholas and stuff. And then along the way, we meet a whole lot of really marketable characters. What did we all think of this movie?
Well, I will say I liked it a bazillion times more than Rainbow Bright.
Yeah. It was a lot more cohesive in what it was trying to do.
Yeah. But it was still boring.
Yeah, it's still, I feel like it still does not reach the heights that Transformers sometimes did.
Yeah, yeah.
Transformers was flawed, but of the three 80s made-to-sell toys movies that we've seen so far, Transformers, I think, is still going to be on top.
They killed a guy.
They killed a lot of guys. But there's also just, there was fun stuff in there and some really fun animation in Transformers. And there's some interesting animation here, but it's overall, is playing it a lot safer, I guess.
Yeah.
Plus, I like the aesthetics, and we can talk more with design much more in this movie than of the three. So this is
sure,
my favorite visually.
Let's get specific. So this film was the second feature film from the Canadian animation studio Nelvana after their 1983 film Rockin' Rule.
Oh, sure.
If I recall correctly, Mom wasn't on that one because I think that you were busy or something. So Valerie and I are the ones that saw that, but how would we briefly describe Rockin' Rule for Mom and listeners who haven't heard that episode's benefit?
It's a post-apocalyptic musical, or not musical?
A musical, but it's like
rock musical.
Rock songs and stuff, and there's like mouse people, but they like mostly look human and then kind of have like little mouse nose things. They're kind of not very good. They don't look very good.
Yeah.
There's a guy named Mock who has like the most detailed face and is very like Mick Jagger, and he's like the bad guy and he's very extra and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a very kind of janky movie, but very ambitious.
Yes, ambitious.
But it didn't do well. It was a financial disaster for them. So they ended up taking a lot of commissions for other people in the period after that, including shorts and ads and stuff like that. And then this was the next actual movie that they made, which was, of course, with a property that they did not create.
Yes.
With over $34 million in worldwide sales, this movie set a box office record for Canadian and non-Disney animation and has remained one of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's largest earning releases.
Oh, wow.
The film's success, which saved Nelvana from closing, helped revive films aimed at children in the U.S. market. Because if we also recall, the early 80s is kind of the time in which even Disney themselves are floundering a bit. Later this same year, which I'll talk about later, The Black Cauldron released. So that's the time period in Disney that we're at.
Yeah.
For production, The production on the movie lasted 8 months, more than twice as long as the 3-month production of the Rainbow Bright movie. But still very short, all things considered, for an animated feature.
Yeah.
And it took place in Canada, Taiwan, and South Korea. So there was definitely outsourcing, for working on it. American Greetings, the owners of the Care Bears characters, began development of a feature film adaptation in 1981. Later, they chose Nelvana to produce it and granted them rights to the characters, in addition to financing the film along with serial manufacturer General Mills and television syndicator LBS Communications. Though major American film studios passed on the project, newly established independent distributor, the Samuel Goldwyn Company, acquired the distribution rights to the film and soon spent a record $24 million promoting the movie.
Wow.
Yes. And actually, I think that might be the Goldwyn rather than Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer for earlier. So this is one of the Samuel Goldwyn Company's, I believe, largest earning releases. But yes, they spent a lot to promote the movie to make sure it did well. And it did do very well. Let's talk about the stories and story and characters. What do we think?
Definitely, I feel like the children and both Nicholas and the brother-sister were much more well-developed characters than, like, in the Rainbow Bright that we saw. And then I feel like, by nature, I think we talked about this, the Care Bears weren't as distinguishable because they all looked the same. But they did have some nice little, you know, personality, is, you know, with some of them.
Some of them definitely stand out more than others.
Yeah. But the ones that really stood out to me.
Well, I think for the Bears, before we move on to the others.
Sure.
I think some of the most standout ones would be like Grumpy Bear.
Yes.
And it was a Secret Heart Bear or something.
Yes.
Because of some of their quirks makes them more memorable, even if they look similar to all the others.
Right. I really loved the stars. The stars weren't characters, but they just like were there to help turn into hold up balloons or be little anchors, or, you know, you could tie a rope to them and they helped. And anyway, they were so cute, their cute design. But the characters themselves that really stood out to me were I forgot what you call them, but basically in the forest of Carrie, no.
Like cousins or whatever?
No, the
friendly forest or something.
Or the Force of Feelings.
Force of Feelings. There it is.
So they were, yeah. And they ended up being, you know, yeah. I mean,
there's a bunch more characters, and basically they're all distinct animals. So they all do look different, unlike the Care Bears.
Yes. Yes.
And they have names like Lionheart and Swiftheart, I think.
Yeah, I think
Swiftheart.
Yeah,
that was a little rabbit.
Still a big heart motif going on.
Right. Yes. And I love the heart design in all of these little characters, because, like, even the elephant has a little heart on the tip of its little nose.
I have a quote, actually, from you, Mom. At one point, you said, "The world needs hearts everywhere. That would make me happy."
Yes. 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 This is true. Because even the leaves and, you know, and trees and flowers, you know, some things were shaped as hearts. But the animals had hearts on them.
Now, it feels like Mom enjoyed this movie a decent amount in terms of the general vibe. The sense that I got from my wife over here is perhaps that she didn't enjoy it on the same level. A couple of the notes that I took were that you do not like that a character's named Mr. Fettuccine. You immediately had a negative reaction to that. When the purple penguin started talking, you said, "Oh no." But then, well, you were getting into it at one point in terms of the characters that you said, that you claimed that you are Bedtime Bear, and you asked if I was Grumpy Bear. And actually, that might have been more just because you were trying to fall asleep and I kept making you not fall asleep. Might have actually been that rather than you being into the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it was fine. I don't know. I guess I wouldn't recommend it.
It would have put you to sleep.
Yes.
If I hadn't been trying to keep you up.
If I had been allowed, I would have been Bedtime Bear.
But halfway through. But to be fair, with the credit or whatever the movie, it has some of those general voices and tones that are just comforting. You know, kind of like when we watched the Winnie the Pooh movie, I just want to snuggle up with the blanket and I just want to be watching it and fall asleep. That would make me happy. It's just like, yeah.
I think it's a pretty inoffensive movie that's easy to fall asleep to, yes.
Yeah, it's just very positive and whatever, but comforting. I just mean it's just that warm, cozy feeling
caring.
It gives you.
Oh yes. My God. yes, Mary.
I will agree it was more coherent than something like Rainbow Bright.
Definitely.
But, I mean, I wasn't enthralled by it or anything, sure. Story-wise. Character-wise, it was straightforward, like, with the names and all of that, which is fine. Like, I don't hate it or anything. The kids, their stories were also really straightforward in a way that wasn't... It wasn't interesting to me. The ending, I did like that, which we'll talk about in spoilers. Yeah.
And I think, for me, as far as the pacing or the action, definitely had ebbs and flows. So, like, I definitely was more, enjoyed it even more and engaged when they were in The Force of Feelings as opposed to in Care-A-Lot, which Care-A-Lot is cute, but The Force of Feelings was just more, I don't know, more plus, interesting.
Well, plus, when they were in the Forest of Feelings, they kept getting attacked by a bad guy, so there's a little more going on.
That's true.
Not because the bad guy was native to there, that's just like what happened, and that's when the evil book lady was sending a spirit thing to go attack them.
Yeah, but too, is like you have more, like you had the river that did initially go from Care-A-Lot to this Forest of Feelings, but then you also had, they're kind of in the woods, they're like by trees, they're by, so I just mean it was definitely more enjoyable. Also, I don't want to forget to say, I did like our villain. First of all, the face in this book looked like the magic mirror of Snow White to me. Mirror, mirror on the wall, kind of that. And it was a kind of a standout thing, kind of like many depictions of Snow White have that mirror, you know, the face in the mirror be more 3D, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. And then also, you know, we talk about with a good villain, you feel like there is a high stakes that it is menacing. It is dangerous.
Yeah, she's trying to like affect the whole world ultimately, which is like, yeah, that's pretty sinister, trying to make everyone be mean in the whole world. You know, like, that's not nothing.
Yeah, and she seemed to keep getting control. Well, you know, she did, kept getting control of Nicholas. And then, you know, he had a decent, you know, evil laugh, oh, you know, whatever. But she was definitely more interesting looking and stuff as a villain than what, you know, she made Nicholas into.
Sure, yeah. I have two notes that are Star Wars related, which you might find surprising. that I have Star Wars related notes for the Care Bears movie. But the first one is that in the beginning kind of montage thing, at one point a bear fell down and into a flying car, flying like cloud car thing. And I said, Anakin, and Valerie laughed because that also made her think of episode two when yes. Anakin, when they're going on Coruscant and Anakin jumps out of a car and stuff,
yes.
A flying car. And then also I said that Tenderheart's rainbow roller is a lot like General Grievous's wheel vehicle in episode 3. Lucas was clearly very inspired by this movie. Should I say jokingly, obviously.
Yeah, character-wise, early on, like trying to name the characters, there was like a bear with rosy cheeks and a shawl, and I was like, is that Grandma Bear? Yes.
Yes,
pretty
that's
much.
Granny Bear, yeah.
I forget the other one that I was like, is it this type of bear? And it was. Also, question about
Graham's bear is what I have.
Yeah, essentially. With the baby bears, are they going to be babies forever?
I don't know how Care Bears work.
Yeah, like to me,
I don't know if she's if she was Graham's forever or if she grew into that.
Right.
Was she mom bear earlier?
Because they have like stuff on their belly to kind of indicate. So like Secret Heart. All right, you can be Secret Heart.
I would
heart.
Say based on a thing that we see at the end, the symbols could change.
That's fair.
So I think that it could grow with them.
Yeah, because I see like with the baby bears, they have little like a star or something.
Yeah.
And little like wraps like they're swaddled. And it's like, are you just baby bear forever? So I had questions there that did not matter to the film.
I'm going to, just for fun, read all the names of the bears and the not bear, but also marketable characters. We have Love-A-Lot Bear, Friend Bear, Swiftheart Rabbit, Cher Bear, Funshine Bear, Cheer Bear, Baby Tugs Bear, Grumpy Bear, Birthday Bear, Secret Bear, Champ Bear, Bedtime Bear, Wish Bear, Lots of Heart Elephant, Gentle Heart Lamb, Baby Hugs Bear, Brave Heart Lion, Bright Heart Raccoon, Good Luck Bear, Playful Heart Monkey, Graham's Bear, Cozy Heart Penguin, and Tender Heart Bear.
I feel like the Sleepy Time Bear, that was different than what they said.
Bedtime Bear?
Bedtime Bear, maybe.
Oh, yeah, because it kept going to sleep. But yeah, I guess that was Bedtime Bear. Yeah.
Bedtime Bear.
Okay.
I also really liked their use of rainbows. It was so cool because, like, it would, they would kind of shoot out a rainbow that was really cool looking because it was almost, what is the fruit roll ups, you know, whatever that kind of, or
fruit
even
by the foot.
Yeah. Or even just sometimes in the games that we play where they have like a light bridge or they have kind of like this smooth. Anyway, it would just jet out a little rainbow, whether it was a ramp to go onto their boat or something to get down, you know, into like a little slide into something. It was just cool.
Let me tell you, let's talk a little bit about the voice actors in here. There's a couple of people I have notes on. First of all, it's just amusing to note that this is the second film in a row from the 80s that we have Mickey Rooney doing voice acting for.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Cherrywood, who's telling the story at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then we also have Braveheart Lion is voiced by Dan Hennessy, and another fun cartoon role that I recognize him from is Chief Quimby in Inspector Gadget, The guy who always gets blown up by his own messages. Tenderheart Bear is voiced by Billy Mae Richards, who you might know as Rankin Bass's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, like the actual character Rudolph.
Okay. And which bear was that?
Tenderheart Bear.
Oh, that's the main bear.
The main bear.
I feel like he's the leader or whatever.
Yeah. Then Mr. Fettuccini is voiced by Brian George. And you know this guy, he often plays Indian, the country dads in shows, and he looks like this.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, if you guys see his face, you'll know this guy.
Yeah.
And then, most significantly to me, is Kim, who is voiced by a young Cree Summer Franks, who's a super prolific voice actress. She's voiced Susie Carmichael in Rugrats, Elmira Duff in Tiny Toon Adventures, Number 5 in Codename Kids Next Door, among many, many others. This is clearly early for her because she's pretty inconsistent. I think she's young. I don't have it pulled up right now, but honestly, I think she started voice acting pretty young.
Cree Summers,
obviously a very good voice actress.
I know, but she was very inconsistent here.
Agreed.
It was sometimes she had the kind of scratchiness that you know that
you associate with her.
Yes, and other times she didn't. So that was, I don't know, it was noticeable to me.
Yeah, it's definitely, most of her characters, I can, like, tell it's her, and I wouldn't have guessed that it was her watching this, both in terms of not quite sounding like what I'm used to her sounding like, and also not the level of quality that I assume. But again, I think she's young. I think she, at this point, like, I don't have it pulled up, but I think she is... She started voice acting pretty darn young. So, yeah. Let's go on to animation. Chubby Star is good. It's a foul star, and I love it.
I love it, too.
It doesn't have an actual name, but it's a fat star, and I love it.
I do, too. I loved it so much.
I think the animation... I wasn't a fan of the design for the people, just generally.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the design overall, and especially the face animation was when he's in front of the mirror of Mr. Fettuccini.
Yeah,
there's something about it that was hitting for me, especially in the scene where he's at his desk or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, I'd say the human designs are forgettable and just not terribly interesting or nice to look at.
Yeah.
I would hesitate to say outright bad, but certainly not my favorite.
Yeah, I think for what it is, it was consistent within their designs and all of that. I just don't really like it.
Yeah.
I agree.
But the Care Bears and the other animals, they were cute.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and the stars, and then all the designs of the little houses, and the clouds, and the things in Care-a-Lot, and I really loved the Forest of Feelings. Yeah, I just love that whole world.
I like that some of the inanimate objects have faces, but yes, in a relatively unobtrusive way, like a cloud car has it, or the big star that is like part of the mast for this boat has it. And also I liked when that big star like ducked its head under a thing to not bump on it. Yeah, like it's cute, but not as in your face as some like 1930s cartoons and stuff.
Yeah, when the bad stuff was happening in the forest, the big star had like a face, like a round mouth. It was very funny.
Yeah.
They had like fun comedy things or like in the background.
Yeah.
So the magician's assistant, Nicholas, is at a circus, and so we come back to the circus at some point after like Care has been removed from the world, and there's like a tunnel of love, except love was crossed out and it said tunnel of hate, and just silly things like that. It's there. It's funny.
I liked the evil book lady's detailed and well animated face. It was reminiscent to me of Mock from the previous Nelvana movie.
Sure.
Yeah. Just in the really detailed lines and the sharpness, I guess, of it too. Yeah, despite having a round bald head. The animation definitely varies, which is definitely a twin product of a short production schedule and multiple studios, including overseas studios, working on it. There's definitely color flickering that happens a decent amount in here, where the color on an object or a character will kind of flicker between two or three like similar colors rapidly in a way that it's clearly not supposed to. And one of the, just sometimes the animation could be snappier or hit better. One of the most egregious to me was just this fall animation, including the bouncing on the ground after some characters fell out of a tree. It was just so slow and lethargic, like no sense of urgency or not. It doesn't even need to be urgent. I don't need to think that they're about to die, but just it could have been more fun. Like, they fall quickly, but then they bounce and like they're fine. You know, there just wasn't, it's kind of a nothing thing that got a lot of emphasis. And yeah, there's just stuff in here there where it clearly could have hit better if they'd had, I guess, more time and just more vision to be able to hit these scenes better, you know?
The color to me was more muted. Like, I really like the designs, but it was not as bright as the colors that Disney often chooses for its things.
Part of me wonders if it's a much. Yeah, it the overall color
muted or?
Yeah, the not just the color, but yeah, like the whole film felt a little darker than it maybe should, and part of me wonders if that's just the current mastering of it, if like it didn't necessarily look quite as dark when it was in theaters, but that's just currently the best version that we have. And if they did like a restored Blu-ray version, it would be more vibrant. I'm not sure. But yeah, definitely the brightness on the screen was all the way up, but the movie was still kind of dark-ish. Not like, like there's a lot of bright colors and stuff. It just like felt dimmer than it needed to be.
Yeah. I mean, it just didn't pop. It just wasn't just beautiful and looking animation, you know, like a lot of what we've seen.
Yeah, the colors and stuff.
Yeah, the knowing that it was, you know, a few studios kind of outsourced, I think that makes sense for one of the things that I noticed. The songs, the first couple, even the ones in the forest, characters sound like they are singing, but the mouths aren't moving as they're like doing group dances and stuff like that. So I can imagine they're just like, just animate them dancing. Don't move the mouths. We won't worry about it. And we'll like dub over or sing over it later. So I can see those kind of shortcuts that they took, probably because of time and stuff like that.
Let's go on to music. So there's multiple songs in here. We've got Care-a-Lot, Nobody Cares Like a Bear, Home Is in Your Heart, When You Care, You're Not Afraid to Try, Look Out, He's After You, and In a Care Bear Family. Generally, the music is, with the exception of Look Out, He's After You, by either written and performed by either Carole King or John Sebastian. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes some of the characters will chime in too, especially on the John Sebastian songs.
Yes, Carole King is on this.
She is. And the opening song that she sings, Carolot, is nice, even if the scene itself is kind of boring. Like, it's not terrible. It's basically a montage of Carolot, but it's pretty slowly paced. I think you could have had more interesting things happening while this song was playing, but we did have the bear that fell like he was Anakin, so there was that at least.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to say with the animation is, like, the design of those vehicles and stuff. There was cool things there.
Yeah, definitely.
Which, I guess I don't know who, if Nelvana, like, sets this aesthetic, or were there books or different shows before this?
It was the early 80s that the card company created the Care Bears, and there had been, I believe, two animated shorts made before this movie, not by Nelvana. So there's definitely some design stuff that was probably already set. I don't know to what extent Carolot itself and the vehicles and stuff were. I imagine the look of the bears was fully set before.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
And I imagine the other animal guys, I kind of imagine all their designs were created by the card company, but yeah, I'm not sure. Back with the songs, I would, by the midpoint of the movie, I said, I don't really love any of the songs so far, but none of them bother me either. But that did change eventually, because the chase song, in the latter part of the movie, it
you can't say
I'm
that.
I'm gonna bleep it. that 80s drum especially. And Valerie even said, I'm annoyed by how good this song is. But then it also is somewhat inconsistent. Sometimes it really bangs and sometimes it's kind of more weird.
Yeah.
And then it's hampered a little bit by there's one or two parts where it kind of cuts out for some other thing to happen, mm-hmm. and then picks up again. I'm curious what the album version would sound like.
Yeah.
I would assume it doesn't have those gaps.
It's very interesting. The beginning part, it played a little bit and then cut out. And I'm like, was that all of it? Because I'm like, there's something about it.
But then when it came back, it was like hitting, like the music, the 80s drum was hitting and everything. Yes, and it was hitting hard. It was like, oh, wow. Okay.
And then it cut out and then it came back another time and it was slightly different, not quite as good. But it's
still good, and the music's hitting, and there's parts where, like, the singers are, like, singing over each other, like, right. slightly different things in a really cool way. Like, when it hits hard.
Yeah, it felt like it was taking some inspiration from, like, the circus with the, like, more fast talking. It was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
Like, not a perfect song, but no. I can appreciate what they were trying to do.
Definitely.
Yeah, agreed. But yeah, Carole King's song, like, she's a great singer, but some of the lyrics, I don't know, not quite as good. I wish it could have been a little bit better. I don't know, maybe just because it is this property, you have to make sure it fits that specific thing. And so it was good, but I think it could have been better.
Let's go on to the part that our podcast is named after. How's it hold up? Before we really answer that question, I want to get some into the kind of aftermath and stuff of this film, you know, to have full context. Around opening time, producer Michael Hirsch predicted that the Care Bears movie would be its decade's, the 80s, response to Pinocchio and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh my goodness!
It was added, these characters say something important to children. Our challenge has been to create a very distinct character for each Care Bear. A lot of effort went into bringing out their individuality.
And who said this?
One of the producers.
All right. Okay.
Several months after the Care Bears movie, Walt Disney Pictures released its animated feature, The Black Cauldron. It was the most expensive animated film of the time, but grossed less to $21.3 million than Nelvana's production, $34 million.
You're like, yeah, we did it.
It sent a wave of bad feelings throughout most people that worked at Disney that was the case. A lot of like, wow, we're really in trouble. And also from some people like Don Bluth, who at this point had already left Disney, wow, the masses really do eat up this bad stuff when they could be spending more money on my movies. But yeah, there was definitely, it sent a little bit of a shockwave through animators and people creating movies, animated movies at the time, mostly in a negative way.
Yeah, but, you know, was it Katzenberg who was like messing with the actual structure of the film?
Yeah, definitely. As opposed to Rock and Rule, which Nelvana owned outright, the characters in the Care Bears movie were the property of American Greetings, who paid Nelvana a service fee to work on the film. Nelvana, however, hardly received any profits from the production. This caused its founders to express regret about the situation. In The Nelvana Story, Patrick Lubert explained the Catch-22 that they would face numerous times in the years to come. We could have waived our fee and taken a big piece of the film. We were offered that deal, but if we had waived the fee, we couldn't have made the payroll. Once the picture was hugely successful, we thought we should have waived the fee, but we couldn't have.
Yeah.
And that's basically a cycle Nelvana was stuck in for, I think, most of the rest of the 80s, unfortunately. Yeah. It sucks how movies like this can do really well, but barely benefit the people that actually made them. It did benefit Nelvana enough to prevent them from closing, certainly, but not necessarily by itself. It also all the other smaller things they were doing. They had to keep really working it for a while to reach a more stable point. Do we have any notes on the actual question of how this movie holds up?
I mean, yeah, this is nostalgic for you, right?
Yeah.
So how does it hold up in that sense?
Better than Rainbow Bright, worse than Transformers. Yeah, I think kind of like Rainbow Bright, my younger self had more of a, ooh, there was some fun, scary stuff in this in my head with like the evil book lady, but
and
it was,
smoke.
But it was obviously much less intimidating now than it was when I was a child. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. I think it holds up okay in terms of movies literally made to sell toys.
Sure.
Especially for the era it was in. It was one of the first and to be that, and was definitely better than Rainbow Bright. I'd say it's a perfectly passable movie. But you know, eventually in the 2010s you have like the Lego movie, which like is a whole new level of a thing clearly meant to sell toys, but is actually a good movie.
Yeah.
Which you can't directly compare 80s films to that. But in terms of talking about how it holds up, it feels more dated than the Lego movie, not just in terms of, you know, animation prowess and stuff, but in terms of being able to tell an interesting story while also selling a product.
Yeah.
It's definitely clunkier with introduce, like, oh, here's just a bunch of characters. Like, one of my favorite of the animals is the sheep girl, and she just kind of shows up at one point. Like, she doesn't get like a real introduction. There's just a lot of characters, and some of the introductions are just clearly set up to introduce, here's a new character, go buy the toy please. And yeah, some of them are just like, and here's a bunch of other characters, if you like their design, go buy a toy too. It's just like, it works decent enough to tell its own little story, but it's pretty slight.
Yeah, I thought that at least, even though it was kind of weird, of like, these people were close by, but you just never took the river, so you didn't know they existed.
Right.
And they're like, what are you talking about? We only know the forest, so.
I like the implication that there are no bears in the forest.
Yeah,
the bears just left at some point to have their own society, and they also, like, reproduce a lot quicker, I guess, because there's a ton of bears, but there's only one of the other types of animals.
Yes, who knows?
It's a lot of questions that could be raised, and yes, the movie clearly does not want you to think that hard about it.
The first one that showed up is they were on this river, they're going through this cave, and then all of a sudden you see the little raccoon, remember?
That wasn't the first one by any stretch.
I thought that was the first one.
Not even remotely. That was like the sixth one or something. The elephant had been met before that and everything.
Okay. I was thinking that was all after they went through the cave. No, not even a little bit. Yes, you're right. Okay. Yeah.
But that is where one of the characters got introduced. Yeah, it's just a raccoon just appeared.
That's right, it did.
Yeah, I was like, where did this come from?
Yeah, he's just on their boat. Yeah,
I think the first one was the lion because they're like, oh, a lion.
Oh, it was. Yes, they were like coming down determinedly a tree.
The lion and the monkey were the first two.
But he was trying to help them.
He was trying to help them.
Yes.
He's a brave heart.
Yeah. I content wise, it holds up fine. Nothing egregious. But, you know, in the scope of storytelling and stuff like that, it's.
Fine.
Yeah. Is it forgettable?
I don't think there's a ton in it that is particularly appealing to people that aren't kids.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's some movies you can enjoy a ton as a kid and then also find a lot to enjoy as an adult, like Cats Don't Dance. Some movies... they're basically just made for when you're a kid. And this is one of those.
I don't know if I would show this to a kid, though, because there's other things.
Yeah, I think it's been eclipsed in so many ways by better things that it's like, why would you bother?
Yeah, so...
other than it's apparently free on YouTube, so you could watch it there.
Sure.
Yeah, because like Winnie the Pooh was so great when you all were kids, but I enjoy it as an adult too.
Yeah,
and a lot of care, and you just really relate to some of the characters. Like, you know, you adore Little Piglet, you know, Eeyore. I mean, you know, there's just so many. Yeah,
there's something to be said about having a much smaller cast of characters and being able to know them better rather than a huge cast of characters where you can only ever know any of them a little.
And like, kind of bringing up Winnie the Pooh. Just in comparison to, you know, this film is trying to say caring for your friends, like caring and friendship are important.
Not just for friends, but for people in general.
Yeah.
But they do use the word friend. Like, they're always like, I'm your friend, even if I've never met you before.
Right, right. And they're like, I know you like to read a lot. And it's like, how do you know that? I've never seen you. But anyway, it feels... shallow in a way because it's just telling you a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like their motivation is just to care is inherent to their existence in a way that it's not relatable or it doesn't feel like you're able to take out much from it. And the way that they care is, you know, by virtue of their powers or whatever versus something like Winnie the Pooh where it feels like there's a lot more things that you can take in terms of being understanding and like meeting somebody where they're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus like, you know, these kids are jaded because they lost their parents and they don't want to connect with anybody because they don't want to lose them too. We will help them by transporting them to Care Bear Land and like,
it's called Care Alive,
having a magical time. And now they're like, yeah, friendship rocks. Like, you know, it's so in that way, it's kind of shallow or not, you know, not relatable.
Let's go on to our
spoiler alert.
So yeah, the end of the movie is they confront Nicholas, an evil spirit book lady, at the tower that's at the center of the circus or whatever. The Care Bears try to do the Care Bear stare to let him, which
that's
is like
full
a
power.
Which is like a laser they shoot from a laser of good feelings or something that they shoot from their bellies, and then the not Care Bear animals try to join in by making animal sounds. That apparently is a similar thing, but it's ultimately the two other kids who have to appeal to Nicholas to get him to come back to the good side. The animation on Nicholas at the end while he's like in his evil throes is very absurd and like super off model, but it feels like purposeful, but it also doesn't feel, it feels like it could have been done better. It looks mostly just silly. And then I liked that he squashed her face in the book, they animated it in a way that it felt like her whole head was going to pop. Like, yes. The way that he squished her and her, like, face, like, elongated, like, a balloon being, like, squashed. Yes. And then it, like, cuts to a different angle as he closes it so you don't actually see that happen. But, like, it's kind of visceral, honestly.
Yeah, there was a resistance in the book.
Yeah.
Like, it bulged out some.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, they close the book and Secret Heart Bear, after this lady destroys the key, can manifest their own keys. So they're able to lock her in and she's gone and everything goes back to normal. And then,
better.
Fettuccine has a dream that makes him decide to be a better person. And so he wants Nicholas to be part of the act and stuff. So stuff goes good for Nicholas, where the kids get, adopted.
They get parents, and parents are great.
Yeah, parents are great, and the Care Bears up in Care-a-Lot sing a song.
Care-Bear-Land.
That Grumpy is reluctant to be part of this big musical number. Like, they keep cutting and, like, showing a bunch of them, but Grumpy Bear's kind of there, looks notably less enthusiastic about it. And then there was a sing-along lyric type thing with a bouncing, like, heart. And Mom did sing along to it.
Yes, yes.
Which I think says a lot about Mom. yeah, what do we think about it? Well, you guys have anything else about the end?
Yes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It turns out, at the beginning, we had Mr. Merriweather.
No, Cherrywood.
Cherrywood. Totally different.
Totally different.
Sorry. You have Mr. Cherrywood telling the stories to these kids. And then at the end, he finishes the story, but all the kids are asleep. He's like, they never hear the end. And then the wife, Mrs. Cherrywood, calls him Nicholas. And it's like, oh, he's the boy.
Yep.
He didn't have friends, but look at him now, because they cared. He's got...
And now he takes care of a bunch of kids.
Yeah. I guess they're like an orphanage.
I have to assume, because I don't think that Miss Cherrywood could have... had all these children. It's too many.
No, I think it's an orphanage.
I think it's an orphanage.
That's why I'm not sure. It's like, is Mrs. Cherrywood the Kim or whoever she is?
It's unclear.
Yeah, in terms of, like, you know, she was an orphan. And
there's nothing that, like, points that she definitely is, but there's also not really anything that says she couldn't be.
I don't know, but yeah, and also, like, that's not to say Nicholas wasn't an orphan. Maybe he is, but he was taken in by Fettuccine.
Yeah.
So,
there's no indication of parents for him. Even his, like, show that he's putting on that the two other kids go to with their parents, like, there's no, like, shot of Nicholas's parents.
No, it's Fettuccine.
Right. So, yeah, I kind of assume that he's also an orphan.
So yeah, that's kind of the twist or whatever, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, perfectly decent little twist. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also liked I definitely liked the song in the credits, but I liked that song at the end there.
In a Care Bear family?
Yes.
The song in the credits, I think, is just another rendition of Care-a-Lot.
Okay. But I liked the ending song that I got to sing
in a Care Bear family.
Yes.
No more spoilers. Let's go on to our favorites and least favorites. What was your least favorite scene in the movie?
For me, probably the scenes where you have the kids roaming around. You have all the kids turn mean and against each other when Nicholas first, you know, the evil book lady, they put a spell on people.
Like, they were physically fighting.
Yeah.
Like, the animation for that was pretty...
janky.
Yeah, not just janky, but like what they were saying, having them do was
silly.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, I'll go with that too.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. Cause Nicholas was like, stop them. And so she's like, well, you can stop them with this. So just his kind of emotional turn as well. I'll agree.
What was your favorite scene in the movie? I guess when the song that I liked was playing, just because the song I liked was playing. So yeah, I'll go with the chase scene in the latter part of the movie.
I think maybe for me is when Bedtime Bear fell into the river and then the little penguin. Wasn't it a little penguin?
It was a little purple penguin.
A little purple penguin that came, and that little character came, and it popped out and saved him. It was just so cute. And then you got to see all of the cute shapes on the you know, the boat even again. But just that character, and it was cute.
Yeah, I guess I'll agree with you, Danica, because of the song. Like, that was...
Woke you up.
Right, right. Energized me.
Who is your least favorite character in the movie?
I guess I'll say Kim and Jason. I don't know. They're like, we don't need friends, and they're quick turn. Even though, you know, they had that part at the end, but I'll say them.
I'll say Jason. They're the same. There's no difference between Kim and Jason. One's short, one's tall. There's a boy and a girl, but like they're functionally the exact same.
Yeah.
In terms of everything they do. I don't need them. Just make it Kim. I still won't necessarily like her that much, but like...
Yeah, what do we get from there being two of them?
Not much, other than, like, there's a boy and a girl that kids can cast their, like, be like, oh, I'm just like them. Just like them for real.
I think I'm going to agree. I was just trying to think, because I was thinking of, like, Fettuccine, but I enjoyed his animation and the mirror, and I think I agree. I think my least favorite is going to be Jason, because... Just not, you know, not a lot of character development, and you didn't need both Kim and Jason.
Who was your favorite character in the movie? And also, which was your favorite Care Bear, and which was your favorite of the not bears?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Let
me think.
If it's all the same character, that's fine. You have to at least list two characters. Favorite character is Evil Spirit Lady, because I love to see Evil Woman winning. favorite bear is Grumpy Bear, because I love the grumpy ones. And favorite other friend is the, I think, Gentle Heart Sheep or something like that, because her design and voice was adorable.
I'll give... Would you be mad if I said favorite character was the star, the chubby star?
You know, do what you gotta do, babe.
No, I mean, it was okay, but it's hard to choose a favorite character. They're all the same. There's nobody that's really standout. So I'll say chubby star as my favorite character. For favorite Care Bear, I liked, she wasn't in it a lot, or I don't know, but the Lucky Bear.
Yeah.
Just because she's like, you know, you just need a little luck. And then she like slips and falls, but like finds the piece that you need. I don't know. I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
For a favorite not bear caring creature. No strong feelings on this, but I'll go with the elephant one.
No, I can see why you say the elephant, because I love that design. I think I am going to agree with Danica, and my favorite character, the Evil Book Lady, because I feel like she was the most well-developed character or strongest character.
She had a presence.
Yes. Like her motivation was like evil.
But yeah, yes. Yeah.
And she had a good evil laugh. and then I think my favorite Care Bear, I think I'm going to go with Grumpy Bear also, because, and especially Grumpy Bear did the most, like, trying to fix the little rainbow thing all the time. But I did really like the little good luck, little Lucky Bear, too, because she was there trying to help him a lot. And, yeah, but, yeah, I'm going to still go with Grumpy Bear. And then in our
the other
Force
animals.
Of Feelings, Force of Feelings, I love the elephant design. But I think I'm going to have to also go with Danica on this one. The little sheep. I just loved her little hair.
Just another win for Danica.
With her little, that they had that little in her voice. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with her.
This movie was a musical, so what was your least favorite song?
I'm going to go with, is it the one where they're talking about the, am I making this up? Where the locations aren't that far?
Okay, and
there's Home Is In Your Heart?
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, I'll say my least favorite is Home Is In Your Heart.
I think I'll go with When You Care, You're Not Afraid to Try. I don't feel that strongly about this. Probably either that or Home Is In Your Heart. I don't know. I don't feel that strongly about them negative. Like, they're all fine.
I think I'm going to also go with them on with a lot of these with you, Danica. But I think also When You Care, You're Not Afraid to Try.
What was your favorite song? Easy, Look Out, He's After You.
Yeah, same.
Yes, I agree.
It's just the most interesting, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got the most going on.
It's ambitious.
It's ambitious, definitely.
That's admirable.
Yeah, and I liked in, you know, the Care Bear family at the end, but still, it was beat out by When He's
After You. Shout out to Walt Woodward, David Byrd, and Ken Stevenson, who wrote that one. What character would Tim Curry play if he were in the movie?
Fettuccine?
Yeah, I could see that. Now, go with me on this one. Braveheart Lion.
Oh.
What do we think?
I think that would have made me even like him even more.
I mean, it could be fun. Yeah. It could be fun.
Yeah. I could go for that.
That seems fun.
Let's go on to our overall consensus and what we would rate it.
So, this movie was okay, but I don't think I would recommend it unless, you know, it's fine if you want to show... It's fine. I don't think you should probably watch it without a child, because the child will probably like it, and so then you can at least enjoy that. But, like, watching it yourself, you'd probably be like, this is weird.
Watching it with your wife while she's trying to fall asleep and you keep having to stop her is also not a great experience.
Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. I will give it a one. It is at least competent in what it's trying to tell, but story-wise, like, it's just not that engaging.
I am going to say I would not, it's not on a must-see list. I'm just going to lightly recommend, you know, again, it would be fine for children, but I agree that it's, I wouldn't just want to watch it myself. And I don't think if you're, you know, it's like I said, a must-see for you. I do think children, again, would enjoy it. I'm going to say a 1.75. I would almost get to a 2, but I just think that whether it's the copy that we have, even though I really did like the aesthetics and I liked the animation overall, the color just was not as vibrant as I would have liked, especially for the beautiful, cheery world that we were in. And, you know, again, it's not like the story was riveting. So yeah, I'm going to say 1.75 light recommend.
I'm actually in that same ballpark. I'm going to not personally recommend, but like if you want to watch it, you could do a lot worse. I'll say 1.75. Yeah, it's perfectly fine, but there's just so many things that are better that I can't see a whole lot of reason to spend time on it in particular.
Unless your kid really likes Care Bears.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for listening.
Yeah, thank you. And please join me any Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch to watch Final Fantasy IX. You can find me on, like I said, Twitch with Nana Critter, NanaCritter. And my wonderful daughter and daughter-in-law will be in the chat. We're very friendly. My first playthrough, I'm creating character voices, and I have funny reactions because I can get very emotional or not know what I'm doing and run into walls. So come join us any Wednesday at 7 p.m.
I really like your, is it Quina or Quina? I like
Oh,
Quina.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a good voice for them.
What is it? Zorn and Thorn or
whatever? Oh my gosh. Just the most annoying voices, but it works because they are terrible.
Yeah.
And next time, we will be starting our Spooktober movies. Whoa. And we will be starting with a harrowing tale featuring a mouse protagonist as she tries to get through a scary world.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So join us then.
All right. Bye. Love y'all. Bye.
This has been How's It Hold Up with Danica Juarez and Jan James. You can find our podcast on Twitter at How's It Hold Up Pod. That's with each word capitalized and no apostrophe. Also, if you'd like to support us, we have a Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/user?u=279-0566. Every little bit helps, and even with a minimum pledge, you get access to things you won't hear in our main podcast feed. Check it out for more info. The two pieces of music used in this episode were created by Kevin MacLeod. You can find both The Curtain Rises and Cool Cats at incomptech.com. That's incomptech.com. Both songs were licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. More info on that can be found at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0. Thanks for listening. Care Bear Land, you plebeian. Thanks, guys. That's a perfectly clean take that can just be thrown at the end.
Yeah.